Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy, and I'm joined by another special guest today. This time it is Holly Fry, my fellow editor.
Woo!
And you host your own podcast, too, called Pop Stuff.
Right! And I get to be lucky and hang out with you today.
Yeah, so normally you're talking about TV and movies and other pop culture kind
Correct.
Of stuff. But Holly is also a talented seamstress. You design clothes. You sew everything from wedding dresses to Dragon Con costumes to running wear that's appropriate for Disney Marathon.
Yeah.
So fashion is a passion for you,
right? It is indeed. It is indeed. And historical clothing in particular is very near and dear to my heart.
And I really like historical clothing, too. So
who doesn't?
I was really psyched when I asked Holly if she wanted to be on the show, and the first thing you suggested was that we talk about underwear.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the topic for today. We're going to talk about everything from the history of the undershirt to bloomers and corsets. I know it is now October, and so y'all are probably expecting some Halloween stuff. We'll get to that eventually. Not today.
Some of this will be scary.
No, at least, though, Holly is wearing a skeleton shirt today. So she is Halloween in spirit, and also it's going to help me. It's going to help me visualize any conversations we have about corsets and
tight
waist
lacing.
Restriction. Yeah, you could get some pretty tight lacing if that were actually your torso.
Yeah, it's not. I have plenty of fluff right over it. So,
I don't know. Where do you want to start with this? I mean, I was kind of thinking one of the first personal emails I ever sent you, not just a work related one, was about Queen Victoria's underpants.
Yeah. And then you didn't know you were going to get me on my soapbox.
I just knew this lady likes costumes. She likes history. I wasn't expecting the full blast of Victoria underwear passion.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, to set it up, that I'm also just a big fan of Queen Victoria. Like, I'm a dork, and I have her picture in my cube. I carry a picture with me at all times. I just have great admiration for her because she was imperfect. You know what I mean? She is lauded as such an important monarch, but she made a lot of missteps, and that kind of endears her to me. The thing that really got me was this article that you had pointed out about her bloomers, which had been, it was actually like 4 years ago that they were discovered, but it only recently really picked up steam in terms of coverage in the news.
Because they went up for sale just last year.
Right. And the thing that got me is the article in question talked about how it was evidence of how heavy she had gotten in her later life. And she did put on weight. She was like a million years old at that point. But what frustrated me is that they claimed that she had a 50-inch waist, 5-0, based on these bloomers. And that's not how bloomers worked.
Like, they were imagining they were tight.
They were filled up entirely. But in fact, bloomers were worn cinched a great deal. You needed a lot of fabric involved
to make them bloom.
Well, part of it, and we're going to get a little real for a minute, has to do with their actual function, which is to protect your clothing from your body oils and other general, you know, human dirt.
Your very rich, expensive queen's clothing.
Right. And if for anyone who has ever worn Victorian-style bloomers, it's eye-opening the first time because there is a lot of fabric there. And you realize, and we'll come back a little bit to the split crotch, which they had. There's no way to delicately put that. But so that large amount of fabric kind of fills in so that even though there's a split there, you're usually not exposed. If you're standing up in the bloomers, you wouldn't see anything because the fabric kind of gathers around and makes a wall, a protective wall between you and your clothes. So they sort of seem to make the assumption, as you said, that it would be filled out and there would not be a cinched drawstring involved.
And I remember you telling me that a year ago, and I looked at so many articles leading up to this episode, and almost all of them did assume that she had a 50-inch waist, and I saw a lot of things talking about her ascension dress that she would have worn when she was 18, and she had a 22-inch waist.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a very fitted dress.
Yeah.
And saying she went from 22 inches to 50.
She did fill out, and there are some rumors that say she was morbidly obese, and you can even find some kind of gossipy writings of the time that allege that she was up to 60 inches. But I mean, if you do the math on that, and we've seen pictures
of like her very small.
Yeah, she was short. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was like 5 feet tall. So she would have been bigger around at that point than tall. And if you see pictures of like her jubilee towards, you know, the end of her life, she was stout, but she was not 60 inches of waist.
Yeah. But I mean, I thought this was like a good place for us to start this discussion too, because it does show how many misconceptions there are about historical undergarments.
Yep.
And how much there is that that we don't know, that the average person doesn't know, but even researchers, people who get into all of this, because it's not necessarily the beautiful clothing that you keep, you put away, you preserve.
Yeah.
A lot of what we have has kind of come to us by chance almost. And we'll talk more about that later, a really cool recent find that came completely by chance.
Yeah.
But we're just going to go over a few of the basic underwear types today.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what do you think is a good one to start on? Maybe the shirt?
Sure. Since that's a basic one and it's kind of been
the original
around forever. I mean, there are loincloths that are, you know, documented in very early history. But there have been times when something covering from the waist down in like a pant or underpant type fashion has fallen out of favor and back in and back out and back in. But there's almost always been an undershirt that was often quite long. And in some eras, it served the purposes of both.
And we should say, too, I mean, I'm interpreting a real undergarment, a real undershirt, is something that is a thin type of material. It's not what you're necessarily going to be wearing under a cloak or other layers of clothing. It might show some, but it's primarily for keeping under your other clothes, to keep you clean, to keep them clean, to provide warmth. All those things that people still use undergarments for today.
And they were generally very, very lightweight fabrics, you know, the finest anyone could afford at the time, because most of the time there was a lot of layered dressing involved, and you want to minimize the bulk as your layers
cold
build
times,
out.
No central heat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned them showing or not. I'm going to diverge for a brief second. Do you know about the big controversy with Marie Antoinette's wedding gown?
No, I don't.
Oh, so in that era, completely not okay for any of the undergarments to show. And when she showed up for her wedding in France, of course, anyone who watched the movie, or if you've done any reading, it actually did take place, though, where she crossed the border from Austria to France. She had to take off everything she owned and leave it and then go into France as a true
air quotes
French princess. Mm-hmm. And at that point, she was considered a princess because, as many people know, if you're a history buff, she had already had a mock wedding with her brother as a stand-in for Louis Auguste, so that she was technically
a princess of France, royals, where they send off their daughters.
But somewhere along the line, the measurements got messed up for her, or there was an error on the dressmaker's plural, because there were many involved, part, and her wedding dress was too small.
Uh-oh.
And her chemise was showing, and it was very scandalous. And it was one of those things that kind of kicked off the early stages of rumblings of distrust for her, even though, you know, her popularity waxed and waned a little bit before it eventually really exploded into bad press everywhere. Mm-hmm. That was very early on, like a big scandal that, one, they're showing, two, she's acting like it's not even happening.
Poor, like, 14-year-old girl.
I know, just thrust into this world of scandal.
Well, that's really interesting to hear, too, because we think of Marie Antoinette as such a trendsetter, too, mm-hmm. later on.
Yeah.
That she started off her public career, essentially, on such a
huge fashion gaffe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, through different times, sometimes having that undergarment, having the little sleeves or the mm-hmm. the neck peek out was something that was okay.
Yeah.
So how did the shirt then shrink up to a shirt length, if we're thinking of it more as a tunic sort of thing almost, or a chemise?
Well, I mean, even when you say chemise, I mean, right up through Victorian times, it was still full length,
mm-hmm.
even under a corset and with bloomers in some cases. There was also a thing where called a combination. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
It's a bloomer and chemise combo burrito sort of thing. They mesh them together into one garment. So it's almost like, in concept, it didn't look like this, but in concept it worked similarly to a union suit where you would step into it and button it down the front and it looked like you were in like a little jumper.
Okay.
And that was, again, to minimize bulk. But that's really the first time that it kind of shrunk up and became something else that I know of.
And how about for men? What were they wearing after men put tunics aside? They started wearing pants or hose or whatever. What was happening with that long shirt?
Even in, since we were just talking about Marie Antoinette, this is a great place to mention it because it was definitely happening then. They had a long undershirt that was serving as both their, you know, top coverage and their bottom coverage. Even though they were wearing it with pants, it was often down to knee length.
Wow.
And they would kind of fold it. The front was a little bit shorter than the back, and they would fold the front up between their legs towards the back and then pull the back forward and then pull their pants up. And it was acting as their underwear and their t-shirt, or the equivalent of what we would use a t-shirt for today.
That sounds like
a lot
of
bulk.
It does sound like a lot of bulk. And I'm thinking, Holly and I were looking at some pictures earlier today of clothes from, what was it, about the 1830s?
Yeah.
When men wore very, very slim pants.
Yeah.
And I'm just imagining.
It was not happening then.
Okay.
At all. At that point, they had moved on
to other types of undergarments.
Yeah, like a union suit.
Okay.
Which eventually kind of shrunk up to look almost like a wrestling suit.
You have some shirt lines in that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, again, it's similar to what I was saying before about the way bloomers were cut with a lot of fabric. Like, when you see normally a gentleman from, you know, the mid-18th century, you almost always see them in a coat.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason. Because there is a lot of fabric at the back of their pants. There's a lot.
Yeah.
If you watch any of the recent Pirates of the Caribbean movies, they actually really got this right because they have a really phenomenal costume designer. Whether you like the movies or not is a separate issue. But when you see them without them, you see like the big baggy sack on the behind.
Yeah.
And that's part of it, is that they were accommodating all that fabric.
Huh.
And also, you know, it allowed them freedom of movement because they could just kind of sit down and everything would just spread around to kind of fill with spaces.
Well, freedom of movement is going to be sort of a unique thing in this episode. That's probably a good segue to corsets because
sure.
That is the exact opposite of freedom of movement. Although you were telling me earlier today that corsets can be kind of liberating in that you don't have to do anything. It is holding you upright.
Yeah.
I thought about just being conscious of sitting up straight and how that takes so much effort. And this probably speaks to my posture, but eventually you start to get sort of tired even.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about sort of the more extreme too, where you're probably not thinking about how upright you feel. You're maybe thinking more, I can't breathe and I'm uncomfortable. It's not necessarily how it started though.
Well, and it's not how it was for most people.
Mm-hmm.
A well-fitted corset doesn't do that. It doesn't torture you. And I think that's one of those things that history has been done a bit of a disservice by modern film because it's always portrayed as this, I can't breathe. And it's like, then
last
it doesn't
thing
fit
on the,
you.
On the fainting couch.
And those things did happen.
Yes.
But those were like, the women that were doing that were almost like the equivalent of like the Paris Hiltons of our day. Like they were the, you know, privileged fashionistas.
Breaking your ankle in 8-inch heels. Not everybody wears 8-inch heels.
Right.
You might break your
it's
ankle
like
if
you're,
you do.
You're making foolish safety sacrifices for fashion. And that was the same thing that was happening then. Most women were not walking around in a corset that reduced their waist by 4 inches.
Yeah.
They were wearing a corset that was fitted and would provide support to the bust line and smooth out the waist and provide a good foundation for the very heavy clothes.
And I think something that interests me, once you get beyond that idea that a corset was just to be laced as tightly as possible and make your waist as tiny as possible, once you get beyond that, you can start really thinking about all of the shapes. And that's really the goal of the corset, to make your body, whatever shape it might be, into the ideal shape of the time, which
Correct.
Is not always an hourglass shape,
no.
too.
No. Victorian is hourglass, but their corsets preceding that were much more like conical, usually.
Yeah, conical.
Regency was very like a cylinder, where mm-hmm. it was very up and down, which is kind of funny when you think about it, because Regency gowns, you know, they cut up under the bust. And then they were usually pretty loose from there, but mm-hmm. there was still often a corset going on underneath that.
A lot of restriction right below.
Keeping you very straight.
And I think because we do associate the corset so much with that, with more like Victorian style gowns, it's hard to believe at first that there were types of corsets in ancient Greece even.
Yeah.
Not steel, obviously.
Well, they were doing binding at that point to kind of smooth out their silhouette.
And even beyond that, into Italian, medieval, Gothic style dresses.
Oh, yes.
Not the really restricted corsets that we tend to think of, but ones that would smooth you down enough for these very snug-fitting bodices that were popular. But is it the Basque corset that's really the first one that's kind of an iconic corset style, what we might think of today, the very restricted shape?
Probably. Yeah, I don't want to be definitive because I'm like, I think so.
One of
but
them.
I always worry, having not looked for that specific question, that I will have missed something. But yeah, I mean, that's really where it started to be more of like a full body, full containment,
mm-hmm.
hard. You know, you're not really, your body has to do this. It has no other option if you're in
steel
it.
Steel is involved suddenly.
Yes. Hard materials.
I think that one in particular popped to me because Catherine de' Medici, who is a common subject on this show, she was said to, you know, really popularize that kind of steel corset, very rigid style. So I always like it when I can associate a name, you know, like you just did with the Marie Antoinette story, because it helps me think, oh, I know what that looks like now because I've seen pictures of these women.
Exactly. And it's interesting, if you think about, you know, art history, any portrait that you see from there, Elizabeth, there are a bazillion great portraits of, one of the keys to think about is the bodice is always perfectly rigid. Mm-hmm. Like, when you see a painting of Queen Elizabeth, there is never a wrinkle in the bodice. And that's part of why this was going on, why corsets were getting a little bit more rigid and more sort of confining, is because they had to make that perfect cone shape for that nice sharp edge, and then the pleasing folds of the skirt that would fall out underneath it. That was the style. And the only way to get it was with a corset underneath it, because without it, you just kind of look like a lumpy mesh shoved into your dress.
You have a spine that moves and you create wrinkles in your dress.
Yeah. I mean, I if you ever want to see an example of the problems that are created by not having undergarments, I think if you go to like a big convention or something, there are a lot of people now, even at things like Dragon Con and Comic Con, and especially with steampunk having gotten so popular in terms of making Victorian clothes more popular again, there are always people that are maybe a little newer to costuming and they don't realize they need the foundation garment. And you can tell, like, mm-hmm. you go, oh, something's not right there. The outfit looks beautiful, but they don't have the right undergarment. And that's kind of a great quick lesson for the eye, like visually, oh, I see what happens with and without. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's ever wondering, go troll around a convention and look for the people in historical clothes that forgot to make a corset to go with.
Well, it's cool too, and I can appreciate that. You talked about the different silhouettes, but even thinking about silhouettes where a corset doesn't seem like an evident part of it, so sort of like directoire style, you know, so post-French Revolution, dramatic change in clothes, stop mm-hmm. thinking about Marie Antoinette, start thinking about Empress Josephine or someone.
Yeah.
But there's still structural garments underneath there. It's not just a willy-nilly world.
Although Marie Antoinette was kind of a forebearer of that
movement. She was, with her Petit Trianon.
Yeah, her time at Petit Trianon was like, I don't want to do this stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of scandalous things written about her, how she didn't wear a corset, and also asserting her sexual promiscuity as being evidenced by the fact that she didn't want to wear a corset at her private quarters. And, you know, it's a fascinating thing. But even so, there was always a chemise under there.
And it's always something.
Always. Again, because they did not have modern washing machines. Those fabrics were expensive and very fine. Like, even a lot of the time on a chemise that was very well appointed with beautiful trim, the trim was usually just basted into place, and the servants would actually unstitch it from it so they could give the undergarment a good hard wash and then put that delicate lace back on without damaging it. Like, there was always stuff always had to get moved around.
That's good to hear, Holly. That makes me feel better about the cleanliness of people in the past.
Well, then you hear, you know, other tales of gentlemen that would wear their same union suit all winter long and only take it off in the spring to wash it.
We've done enough Arctic exploration episodes
to know the drill on that.
Have the full picture of wearing the union suit all winter. But we've got to talk about the debate over corsets that starts, too, because we've sort of been covering the era where the really extreme corseted figures might go in and out of style. But there's always something there.
Yeah.
But eventually, in sort of the second half of the 19th century, when it starts to become something that people get really up in arms about, or even before that.
There are a lot of political cartoons from colonial era that are about women foolishly, you know, jostling themselves into the tiniest possible thing. There are some really funny ones with very robust sized women trying to get really thinned down, and they have the big giant Marie Antoinette do on.
Historical political cartoons
are some funny business
about fashion are really, really funny. I saw some a woman wearing a large crinoline mm-hmm. and criticizing her maid for looking like a fool for wearing a much smaller one.
Yeah.
All sorts of things like that. Little snarky old cartoons are amusing.
Yeah. So there were people doing that even then, that were tight lacing and being criticized for it. It's like, don't you know your place? Like, please stop trying to be something you're not. And there were doctors going all the way back that were like, I don't think this is a good idea. Mm-hmm.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
But really, but getting really on to the turn of the century, yeah. Health and hygiene reformers, clergy even, yeah. Saying that this is not a good thing or this is a good thing, feminists, of course. And part of this seems like just because corseting did get so extreme during this time with the wasp waist, Gibson girl.
Yeah, that's really like there was a transition from the hourglass of Victorian era. And even with and without bustle, that hourglass kind of stayed in place for quite a long time. If you look at corsets from, you know, early pre-Civil War part of the 1800s right up through the, you know, 1900, 1901, they have pretty much the same shape. There's some variation, but it's always the hourglass shape. But then something happened, and it became more about thrusting the bust forward and the rear end back. And I think that's got so extreme that that's where the kind of debate over it really hit a fever pitch.
Because it starts to look clearly like,
these women
bad
are crazy.
For you. Uncomfortable and like it might even have some long-term consequences.
Yeah, I mean, that was really, there started to really be a commonality of women having health issues, cracking ribs. I mean, for your underwear.
Bad stuff.
That
yeah.
doesn't make any sense. Like, could you imagine?
No.
I mean, anyone in today's society, like any lady, you get up and you put on a bra and it cracks your rib. Like, there's, that just doesn't happen.
That sounds
it's yes. bizarre to think about.
Time for a new style if that's happening. And I mean that was a result. Style started to change and a more natural form started to arise and that started to become more popular. And of course this really freaked out corset manufacturers.
Yeah.
What are we gonna do? We've been putting women in corsets for ever almost.
Yeah.
What are we gonna do now? I read a really interesting article about the corset manufacturer's plight, which wasn't really actually as much of a plight as you might expect, in the Journal of Social History by Jill Fields. And she wrote that the corset saleswoman became really important. Mm-hmm. You needed to be a specialist. And you talked about this earlier, that people who say a corset is automatically uncomfortable, they're in the wrong one.
Yeah.
So that became an important aspect of it. You had to have the right fit. It wasn't just, here's your measurement, here's the waist you're going for. But also, it became something that wasn't just about style and dress. It became a discussion about science and modernity,
yeah,
and even race in really kind of icky ways. And just class and things like that.
Yeah.
The uncorseted figure being slovenly.
Yeah.
But sometimes experts were even drawn into this discussion. And the one that just really blew my mind was this guy, Havelock Ellis, who was cited by the Corset Manufacturers Association as claiming that women had to be corseted because the evolution from a horizontal to vertical position had been so much harder on women. And he even said, quote, the corset is morphologically essential. So this just made me think.
So we should be falling out of our chairs.
We're like boneless bags of organs or something. That can be our segue to the Halloween discussion. But I just thought that was so strange that instead of seeing this clear potential for other forms of structural garments that you could sell, which is, of course, what they eventually came to that realization. Instead, you would think, no, you really have to be in a corset or you'll just collapse into a Wicked Witch puddle or something.
You're just sort of a pile.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, you know, as styles changed, corset manufacturers did realize that there were other things they could sell. You could sell dance corsets. That's my favorite.
Sport corsets.
Those
things are hilarious.
Women playing organized sports at their women's colleges.
Yep.
You have things like tennis and bicycling. You have tango parties.
Yeah.
And you can't wear that really rigid corset if you're going to tango or play tennis.
Yeah.
You need a specialized
corset
product. Yeah, and eventually just the whole silhouette really changes too.
Yeah.
In the teens, the debutante slouch, that might be my favorite thing I learned in this episode, just adopting this entirely new posture, whereas you talk about Queen Elizabeth, portraits of her, she's so upright.
Yeah.
And that had sort of been a standard for a very long time. The new posture being one where you thrust your abdomen out to partly minimize your bust. And it was just, it must have been so strange looking. Now we're used to people with all different sorts of postures, good and bad.
Yeah.
It must have been so strange, though, in this time, especially with older women probably still maintaining a lot of the more traditional styles and postures.
Oh, yeah. And especially, I mean, part of that is born of the fact that textiles and designers' approaches to textiles started to change so much that they were starting to cut garments on the bias because it could be made so much faster thanks to the Industrial Revolution that they could play with how fabric draped a little bit more. And that's actually considered kind of a, I don't want to say wasteful, but that's the word that keeps coming to mind. It's almost a wasteful way to cut a garment. Normally you would cut along the grain, the warp or weft of it, which are the perpendicular threads that run to one another. And then you started cutting along the diagonal between them, and it has this beautiful drape. But you burn through fabric a lot faster.
Yeah.
And so because, you know, prior to the big crash in 29, there was a lot of opulence and there was a lot of like, we can indulge ourselves with beautiful fabrics. Let's cut it on the bias. And then corsets weren't working because they would show underneath that cut because it does cling to the body and it kind of drapes
across
you. Well,
and if the beauty of it is the draping, I imagine you want
the rigidity underneath was not working so well.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I will not be shipping bloomers. No. I don't have any bloomers to ship anywhere.
Well, you would want to keep the bloomers for yourself. I just imagine. Because I think of all of these underwear types we've discussed, bloomers might be sort of the most fun.
Well, they're very personal.
They're just, I mean, I'm imagining like baby bloomers, that sort of thing. We're going to get into more of the details, though.
Yeah. It's getting very real.
They're not always the puffy, ruffly baby pants I'm imagining.
No. I mean, they often were adorned with cute trim. But, you know, it's one of the interesting things, if you've ever talked about the Moulin Rouge and Can-Can dancers, you know, people always talk about how they were a little loose sexually because they would dance and show off their split underwear. Okay, everybody was wearing split underwear, and here's why. Let me just take you for a walk down Learning Lane. You may not have wanted. If you are wearing bloomers, which go under your corset and a chemise, and then your corset over it, there is no way to pull those bloomers down without undoing everything, taking off all your clothes, etc.
Gotcha.
So they were split almost all the way, that entire seam that runs, you know, from your belly button to the small of your back, between your legs, your crotch seam, was almost open all the way in some cases.
So almost two pant legs with a waist.
Right, with a drawstring. Sometimes they weren't even joined.
A 50-inch waist.
Well, and again, I'm going to go back to all of that fabric allows you, when you're in the outhouse, to kind of pull those pant legs apart up around you, and then you could sit on the toilet and take care of business.
So a practical
it's completely
purpose.
Practical.
Yeah.
If you could call that practical. By modern standards, it seems woefully impractical. But that was its practical reason. That's why the underpants were split. They weren't split in an so that they could show them while dancing.
So you could can-can.
They were just, that was the only way to make it all work and like live your life in a semi-normal way.
It's kind of a disturbing note now to apply that to can-can dancer. I don't know. Hopefully they were at least breaking out a pair of special bloomers just for the can-can.
You know, I think it depends on where you are watching.
Yikes. What kind of can-can joint it was.
Yeah, which shift.
Probably. So bloomers, you want to move back on up to the brassiere?
Yeah, although we should talk about the bloomer trend that you found fascinating that we talked about a little before we recorded.
Yes, pantalettes.
The pantalettes. They're fake.
And I think this is maybe what I think is kind of cute. So I'm identifying with the cute baby bloomers and then the pantalettes because they're so strange.
They're
but
not real
so
bloomers.
Fun. Yeah, so they apparently appeared in fashion magazines as early as 1805, but didn't really catch on for a while. People must have just seen them because they do look, it's a bizarre look. You know? And I can imagine women in 1805 with these radically new silhouettes already being like, okay, and now I'm supposed to wear pantalettes under these. But they did eventually catch on, although they finally became something that just little girls would wear.
Yeah.
But these are little pants that would peep out from under your dress.
Uh-huh.
So not the floor sweeping dresses anymore, ones that were about ankle length or so. So you would have pants, very pretty satin ones, ones with lace, peeping out from underneath. And what I find so bizarre is that eventually it got to the point where you might not want to wear that, but you liked the look.
Yeah.
So you would wear false pantalettes.
Yeah.
Which were, I have to imagine, just leg warmer sort
of
length.
Yeah, they're like from the knee down.
With tapes attaching them up to your waist, whatever other garments you have going on up there. Holly and I were speaking earlier about Dickies, you know, false fronts for false turtlenecks, false camisoles, things like that.
Yeah.
Basically a way to look like you're wearing an undershirt that you're not really wearing. And I can see, I've never worn one of those myself. I don't have any false turtlenecks, but I can see the appeal for something like that.
Yeah,
you want a layered look.
You
want to
stay
on the
mode.
But
not mess with old stuff.
I can't really get my mind around false pantalettes because it doesn't seem like...
It would be any more convenient.
It seems like having these weird tapes going over most of your legs and then leg warmers, things would get twisted and uncomfortable. We've already talked about the split bloomers and all the fabric there and how awkward that is.
Especially with a crinoline.
It's just more fabric and
it's
weirdness.
Tricky, yeah.
Whereas it seems like... Just a pair, I'm imagining, comfy PJ, loose pants that you wear under your dress. Seems so simple.
Maybe we should bring it back. I double dog dare you. I'll do it if you do it. You know I'd do it. I
start
walk right in here with it.
I mean, can I wear leggings under
See,
under
that's
a dress.
The thing. It's evolved to be more like that.
Yeah, so that counts. All right, final topic is this. If we weren't talking about this now, I think Dublina and I would be talking about it in our amazing 2012 discoveries in history, even though it's not technically a 2012 discovery.
Because they had to date it and be very careful with their data.
Yeah, so we are talking about the oldest bra in the world, or what's believed to be the oldest bra. So previous assumptions up until now were that men wore these shirts that we've discussed. Women wore a chemise, corset, whatever, other sort of garments, but there wasn't a bra like what we think of as a bra. And we should give some detail to that, because bandeau styles were also worn in ancient Greece. So we're not talking about a bra like that. A bra has to be two distinct cups to count.
Not like an undershirt, not like a camisole shirt, but an actual structured garment with seaming that creates, as you said, the cups for each of your breasts.
Exactly.
So it's a weird thing that on the air.
So in 2008, there was a very interesting discovery in East Tyrol, Austria, in Langberg Castle, which was built, I think they're guessing around 1190 or so. But the castle had been pretty extensively remodeled in the 15th century. And during some 2008 work, some 2008 renovations, this vault of trash was discovered. And I love things like this because it gives you a peek at everyday life rather than the things that people have preserved for whatever reason.
Yeah.
This is a vault of trash. It's filled with things like wood.
The debris of life.
Textile scraps.
Yeah,
all the stuff that nobody would have really cared about.
Yeah.
But because of the conditions in this vault, all of it is really well preserved. So 2,700 textile fragments were found, according to the great Smithsonian blog Threaded, which is lots of fun for fashion
history.
It is
really fun.
And among those fragments were four bras.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is fascinating because this, you know, the 15th century is one of those times when most costume historians are at best taking a wild stab at the layering that may or may not have been going on.
Mm-hmm.
We know their clothes were very tight, and a lot of people have just assumed along the way that just the tightness of the clothes was kind of covering all of the bases of keeping everything in place.
Supported and
because,
comfortable.
And it went all the way down to the arms. Like, if you see any modern films or anything about that era, what people often remark is that the bodices and the arms are all very form-fitted and tight. And, like, mm-hmm. how would you move? Not so much. This kind of turns that whole concept on its head.
It really does. And they're different style bras, too. So it's like you got a little selection from the department store on those. It's not just one cut. There are two that look kind of like this contraption that's occasionally referenced from this period called breast bags.
Yeah, which is kind of like a halter top by today's standards.
So I was talking to Holly about breast bags and thinking that they sounded really awkward.
If I had a nickel for every time somebody wanted to talk to me about that.
And you did say it's basically like a halter top. So two of them kind of like that. Apparently those could be used for various silhouettes that you were going for, whether to minimize or enhance.
Right.
I feel kind of weird saying that on the podcast.
It's getting a little late.
But they do essentially just look like supportive halter shirts, almost. The third looks like a modern bra. It's got straps and cups and a back band.
Yeah.
And then the fourth looks like a 50s style bra, one that extends low on the rib cage.
Yep.
I guess for some extra support. But the really cool thing about all of this is they're pretty. I mean, if you look at the picture of the one that they're really showing off, it does look like a bra, but as much as it has been destroyed over the years, it's pretty. You know,
it's not pristine, but there was
embellishment. It has little lace details on it. Yeah. It's not just this utilitarian garment, you know?
Well, and there has been some discussion about whether or not, about its actual use, mm-hmm. whether it was a functional foundation garment or if it was more of a boudoir garment, mm-hmm. which brings up a whole nest of other questions of like, you never think about, you know, kind of that sort of titillating approach to fashion going on so much in that era, even though I'm sure it must have been on some level. I mean,
we got here.
Everyone has wanted to please a partner at some point in time since history began. So there is a lot of debate over the actual purpose of that garment and why would they make it so? Well, we make pretty undergarments that no one is ever meant to see, or at most, you know, our closest family members. So it's kind of fascinating from that perspective.
It is. And it's just a little peek into fashion from hundreds of years ago. And also such an eye opener too for folks who assumed that the bra was something that didn't develop until way, way after this, that the bra had to have come after the corset.
Yeah. And I mean, it's if you look it up online or even in many books, the history of the bra usually starts in 1913 with Mary Phelps Jacob, who is a socialite who found that those bias cut garments that I was talking about earlier, her corset messed up the line of it. Like mm-hmm. you could see the bones sticking out and she didn't find it pleasing, and that she and her maid concocted what was the first bra out of two handkerchiefs and some ribbon. I have some theories. We actually did a bra episode on Pop Stuff, and I kind of went off on my, I bet the servant did all the work. And she took all the credit. She was probably a lovely girl. But that's where we normally mark the start of the modern brassiere, because even though there were various forms, that was the first one that was patented. Mm-hmm. And then she sold that patent and it took off as an industry.
Well, and we had been, I think a listener had recommended this BBC history article where this news came out about the bra find to our podcast and then also to Mom Stuff, because clearly they're going to be interested in this news too. And I forwarded the article onto y'all are just going to think I send Holly
all underwear articles,
any historical underwear.
But it is something I'm fascinated with, which you knew.
I did. So I forwarded it onto you and I remember your response to that too. And it was, at first, you know, I saw the subject line and I was just ready to dismiss it. I was thinking, oh, surely it'll be some modified corset or bandeau. And you were like, it really looks like a bra.
Yeah.
So I think everybody might need to go check out that picture now. So,
it is. It's very eye-opening because it looks exactly
like a bra
you would buy now.
It
you
looks
just
like
time-traveled
a bra
it back.
That went through the dryer.
Like 32,000 times.
Exactly.
And then your dog chewed on it a little bit. That's how you could recreate your own historical garment.
Your own historical garment.
It's so fascinating. And I'm always fascinated by all of this from both the fashion standpoint and the development and evolution of fashion. I mean, there's so many things we could still talk about because I'm such an information junkie about it, but I just think sociologically, it's really fascinating how people have treated their bodies through time in the interest of fashion.
Yeah, and I think people deciding to accept or reject fashions that are either clearly uncomfortable or weird is really neat, too. So the idea that women would accept the S-shaped corset, you know?
Yeah, it's the epitome of beauty.
But then...
Which is killing
rebel
them.
Against it, too, eventually. Yeah. I'm not going to wear something like that anymore. And you really do get into that more in the teens and 20s.
Yeah.
But then it goes back, too, with Christian Dior's new look. I mean, we've got to at least mention that for a second.
Yeah.
Sort of a return to a corseted look. And a lot of women really didn't like that was the direction style was heading back in. There were protests over that look, but also a mass exception or acceptance of it rather too. Something so different from the boxy war rationing styles that had come immediately before. So what fashions work, what ones don't, when people decide to accept it, when they see those pantalettes in 1805 and are like, I cannot imagine wearing those, but then their daughters wear them a generation later.
Yeah.
It's really neat to me to think about all that.
Yeah. And I mean, corsets are so fascinating, I think, to people today because people still wear them. I mean, they're fetishized in some cases, but also just as a fashion garment, they've moved outside. They're in, I mean,
yeah, they aren't
whole undergarments bridal parties that are in beautifully, you know, made corsets. And that's sort of how I became fascinated with them, was seeing like these really beautiful, fascinating costume pieces and going, oh, that's really, ooh, I should learn how to make those. And that's how I ended up down the rabbit hole of like having this ridiculous library of books about the history of corsetry and how it's evolved. And I just, there's a reason we're fascinated with underwear. I'm not sure what that reason is even. But corsets, I think in particular, really strike a chord with people because one, they tend to be divisive.
Mm-hmm.
You either go, oh, yes, or that is crazy. And there's not a lot of in between. And two, I mean, there's just something fascinating about kind of taking control of your shape in that way that draws people into it. And we didn't even get into tight lacers, really. Like the people that really do body modification through prolonged use of corsetry, which is a fascinating world in and of itself. It's like the one garment that just makes people.
Yeah, the undershirt is not having this
effect on
people.
It doesn't have that same now. You're not like, oh, chemises, tell me all about them. We got to incorporate those in outward fashion.
All right. Well,
I'm going to make bloomers come back. You and me both are going to start wearing them underdressing. Pantalettes all the way.
Yeah, pantalettes. All right, Holly, let's make this happen.
You don't dangle that carrot. I will hold you to this.
I'm going to come into work in a couple of weeks, and there will be like a neatly folded pair of pantalettes on my desk. I'm not sure what length dresses I would even have to wear with pantalettes, though. I'd have to get out my old prom dress or something.
Just below the knee.
Just below the knee for pantalettes. That might look like I was living in the Oneida commune or something.
We're not going to go full length Bo Peep. We're going to go calf length on the pantalettes, just below the knee on the dress. Then we're going to post pictures.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, we'll all look forward to that.
To the new fashion trends
start. Yeah, new trends.
The new old trends.
New historical trends.
Totally doing it.
So if you guys want to share any other details about probably historical underwear or historic inspired underwear, let us know. We are at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Twitter at Mist in History, and we are on Facebook. And I know that so many of our listeners sew, and a lot of you guys are actually heard from costumers. Doing theatrical costume and cosplay stuff. And I really hope that you guys enjoyed this especially and share some of your own stories about trying to get that right look that Holly is talking about. You can't just wear the dress. You've got to have...
Start from the inside out.
Exactly. So I don't know. Do we have any cool fashion-related articles?
We actually have an article on how corsets work.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little breezy. It doesn't get into all of the stuff that we got into here, but it covers all the basic points. You should absolutely check that out.
Yeah, you can do that by searching for how corsets work on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.